they say, you know, when I came in, they were telling, oh, no relationships for a year, you know, and, you know, nobody knew if that actually worked because nobody actually tried it. And so, so I was going to be the first, you know, and this last time around, I was just trying to do everything I was told because I just did not want to go back to where I came from. And so I have an amazing home group, the gentleman's group, and these guys, you know, were so mean to me. They were absolutely mean to me. Sit down, shut up. We don't want what you got, you know, and just take the cotton out of your ears and put it in the mouth and do as I say. And it worked, though. It absolutely worked. And so then when I was in rehab this last time, it was co-ed rehab. And so there's guys and girls. And so for me personally, coming from where I had came from, it was like Disneyland. I'm sitting in a detox, staring out the window like, oh, there's my treatment director. And oh, there's the, you know, and I know that guy from AA. And that guy, and they're like, shut up, you know, sit down. And so I get released into Gen Pop, you know, and everybody's like, why are you smiling? Why are you laughing so much? Why is this so much fun? And I'm like, oh, there's girls and everything here, you know, and showing off. I'm working out. I'm, you know, getting fit. And it was just a second chance in life. And I knew that this thing worked because I'd been around long enough and I saw it work for you guys. And I just thought that it might work for me. And I knew that there were suggestions and I knew that I could do them because I tried them before. And so, or at least I thought I did. And so I started doing those things. And about 2 months into it, I was maybe about 4 months sober. I met this girl, and we were actually doing a health class, and I met a lot of girls while I was in there, but I met this one particular girl, and they paired us up, and we were supposed to go through the pantry, and like we were shopping, like we were a family, and so it was a weird exercise. I mean, we weren't allowed to talk to them, but we're pairing up like we're getting married. Anyway, and so we're in the pantry at the Crossroads Mission, you know, in the back of the kitchen. It's all dirty, and, you know, there's rats running around everywhere, and I'm just like, you know, I think I like you. And she's like, I think you're crazy. And she wouldn't have anything to do with me for good reason. And actually, the first time we met, she was fresh out of detox. The detox was 10 days. And I was in there's an education center, you know, where we're supposed to sit there and, you know, do work or get a GED or I don't know what it was for. That's not what I did in there. Anyway, I'm sitting there getting a massage from another inmate or whatever. And she's sitting across from me, I don't remember what I said to her, but she just looked at me like I was crazy, you know, because I was crazy. Anyway, so we were good friends, and we hung out a little bit, and she had a couple relationships while in rehab, and you're not supposed to do that, apparently. And I was, you know, Mr. AA, Mr., you know, Mission Man of the Year, you know, and trying to, you know, make a name for myself, So, you know, I wasn't involved in any relationships until, you know, I graduated the program and then start talking to her and we go to the movies and, you know, it's right inside a year sober and I didn't want to tell my home group about it, you know, and my sponsor, yeah, he's passed away now, but probably because he sponsored me, but anyway, I remember him telling me, well, he told me first, you know, he probably gonna get mad at me for saying this, but he told me first that you know you have no business messing with those girls in the mission, you know. And I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, Bo, you can't even afford their medication, you know, and let alone. And he was right. I understood that, you know. They got so many things going on, and you're just gonna mess every bit of it up, you know. I mean, they've got, you know, kids and family and all court cases and all these things, and you got no business getting involved in any of that. And so I acted like I knew what he was saying, but I was still trying to figure out how to get around it, and I did that for years with this guy. Anyway, when we first started seeing each other, I didn't want anybody to know in AA because I didn't want to look like a predator, you know. you know, I mean, she's a newcomer. I mean, I was a newcomer too, but not in my mind. I was an old-timer by then, you know. I had about a year sober, And she's like, she didn't like the secrecy. She's like, what, there's nothing wrong with what we're doing. She wasn't even working a program. I mean, I don't even think she had a big book, you know. And I'm like, oh, no, I'm Mr. AA. You know, I can't let anybody know that, you know, no relationships in recovery and stuff. And so we weren't in a relationship. We weren't in a relationship, guys. You know, we were just seeing each other. You know, it was nothing serious. And I remember my sponsor told me, he goes, Bo, you know, he goes, do you spend time with her that you don't spend with other people? I'm like, yeah, you know. She goes, do you say things to her that you don't say to other people? Yeah, I guess so, you know. do you do things with her that you don't do with other people? Yeah, I guess so. You're in your relationship, idiot, you know, and it's like, you owe her the honor and the dignity to be honest enough, you know. Anyway, it took about a year, 2 years. She kept leaving me because I wasn't going to be responsible. She's like, you know, Kemper, you know, I have a stepson and a beautiful man, 16 years old, and I just met this kid, and, you know, every woman or kid I've ever came into contact with, you know, I hurt in my life, and she's like, are you ready to be a father to my son? And I'm like, no. And so she left me. And then she's like, are you ready to get married and have kids? I'm like, no. And she left me again. I'm just like, I didn't understand why she kept leaving me, you know. And she just kept leaving. And so anyway, finally, my mom died. And she got pregnant. And I asked her to marry me. And she said no. For another year, and so anyway, but that was, you know, almost 12 years ago now, and it's been happily ever after ever since, so that's the end of my story. Thanks for letting me share. No, I'm just kidding. No, I'm just kidding. That's just a little history lesson. What really happened was she got a sponsor. She got serious about the steps. I've always been serious about the steps, and we have not found a problem in our lives that the steps, the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous cannot solve. If we're willing to go to God with each specific matter, great things come to pass for us and countless others, you know. And it talks about a thing springing up around you that you don't want to miss. And this is one of those things. Like, this is the last thing I wanted in my life. If you would have told me 12 years ago, or 11, you know, 11 years and 11 months and however many days ago, you know, that this is what I would have got, when I walked through those doors this last time, I would have ran screaming, you know. I would have never came back. I mean, it was the last thing I wanted. You know, responsibility, pain, suffering, you know, everything that comes with, you know, a beautiful relationship. All the things that come with, you know, a wife and three kids, that's not what I came here for. You know, I came here with my hands out and my mouth open. You know, I wanted what you guys had for nothing, and I wanted you to listen to everything I said. And I didn't want to hear anything that you guys had to offer. And I have to tell you that I've been so blessed in my life to be involved in this thing and to stick around here long enough to watch miracles happen, not only for me and my family, but for you guys too. And that's how I know this thing can work. You know, even though it didn't start on the best terms, we figured out that, you know, it wasn't us that really did this, it was God, you know. And I didn't understand how, you know, this thing just fell into my lap. You know, this beautiful life that I didn't think I deserved when I got here. Like, I threw all that away multiple times. You know, every time I ever had a chance at that, it was a drink ticket, you know. And as soon as I drank or whatever, it was gone again. And I did not understand how the drinking bone, you know, hooked up to the divorce bone and hooked up to the jail bone and stuff. And you guys taught me that. You guys taught me how to live happily and healthy in life. And then you guys also taught me how to get well when you're sick too, because you can get sick while you're sober from this disease, and it's not just you. It's the only disease that's not contagious that affects everybody that comes in contact with you, especially those that love you the most. And so, you know, one of the worst. I mean, we don't really call each other names, you know, when we're mad. But the one insult that we have in the house is dry drunk. You know, you're really dry today. You know, and it's like boom. World War III in our house, you know. But we have sponsors, you know, and we work steps. And so every problem that I have now, I'm on step one. I may be powerless over this, and my life's unmanageable. And then everything else follows after that, you know. I go to God with it. I make a decision. I actually look at what I've done in my own handwriting. I admit it to myself and another person. I become willing to do something about it. I ask God to help me before I decide to do something about it, and other people too. And then I go about making things right again. And then I try to keep a maintenance program where I do this every day. And I try to pass it on to the people around me too. But you know what I found is nobody wants to hear you're doing well. They want to see it, you know. And so my actions speak louder than my words. My actions speak louder than my words. And just recently, I decided at 42 years old to make a career change. And I decided to join in a career where 18 and 24-year-olds are applying for it. And so I decided to go into firefighting. And it's the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. And it happened so fast. And I'm not the one that suffered through this. Yeah, long nights, 168 hours a week, you know, and then seeing things that, you know, people just, I guess, aren't meant to see. I think they are meant to see. I think God blesses certain some of us to be there in the worst of times. Because I tell you, one thing that helps me get through that and the other things that I've seen, my son has a severe food allergy, and we just found that out a couple weeks ago. And he has anaphylaxis, and so he can die. And so we have an EpiPen in our house, and it's serious. I mean, it's serious. And it's not a food that is labeled, like with warning labels, too. So we have to be extra cautious about these things. And I found out, though, by going places and being places, and I learned this before through my experience being drunk, being in places I shouldn't have been and seeing things I never should have seen, that I'm not the one that's in charge, and who am I to say that this isn't supposed to happen, or that there's no purpose for this, or that this is wrong and this is right. You know, AA taught me that there's somebody bigger in charge, and it's not me. And so we work traditions in our relationship as well, too, and in life, and there's one ultimate authority, and that's God. And so if I understand that, I can align myself with whatever's coming in front of me today. And I tell you what, the power of God goes deep. I mean, we're just talking about it this morning, as a matter of fact. I'm in paramedic school, and it's legitimate medical school, and I'm working as a full-time firefighter as well, too, and so I'm not around very much, and I had to take a pay cut to do this. That was one of the reasons why it took me so long to do it, and so our family is really struggling with financial insecurity right now, and every time we're just seeing like we're at absolute financial destitute, money shows up in the bank account. I don't know how that is, and it's just amazing. You know, I should know how it is because I'm responsible. You know, but it's just amazing how that happens. And I don't pray for money. I don't pray for God to get me out of this. You know, and I'll never do it again. I pray for the knowledge and the will to do the next right thing in this situation. It's amazing how these things work out for me. I mean, it's absolutely amazing. And you know, me and her haven't always aligned with our interest in stuff. You know, I've always been big into working out and stuff. And when we first moved in together, she's like, "What's all this Tupperware doing in the refrigerator? Why do you eat so much chicken?" You know, and now, you know, now she's the fittest person I know, and she actually gives classes and seminars and stuff. I mean, I'm a personal trainer, but she is too, and it had nothing to do with me. She's never listened to anything I've ever told her, you know. Matter of fact, she tells me, "Put that soda down. What are you doing eating? I know you're sneaking food at the station, you know." And she's right about all of it, you know. We're like, why do you even work out if you're going to eat like that? But we're seeing that in my son, my 16-year-old son, too, now, you know. Over COVID, he kind of gained a bunch of weight and stuff. And, you know, he was young. And this kid's a stud now. I mean, they call him Captain America, you know, on a football team. But, you know, that doesn't matter to me. And I told him, okay, big deal about that. He's a straight-A student, honor roll student, too. And he's watched me go through school at 40-something years old, you know, and be challenged by this. And he's watched me stay physically fit through all this and take on a job that, you know, demands physical fitness. And he's watched me do some of the scariest things that I've ever done. And I never told him to do these things, but he does it. You know, takes his chicken and rice to school, and all his friends want to eat it. You know, and he's giving his friends workout advice, and you know, and telling them how to live. And the other day, I was driving home from the gym, and there's a bunch of kids on the street corner, and I didn't even recognize him driving by. There's this one kid that stands out from everybody else, and he looks driven, he looks focused, he's physically fit, and he's not like this. He's standing there watching. And then when he waved at me, I'm like, oh, that's my son, you know, like, wow, that's amazing, you know. And I just text him and I said, "Son, I am proud of you. I am proud of you. You took this thing and ran with it, you know." And that's what we're talking about. You know, this is a hereditary disease. I mean, even though it's not, and it's generational, you know, and they talk about the sins of the father and stuff. And we broke a cycle in our family that had been going on for generations and generations and generations. And that's not what we set out to do. It was just a byproduct of taking advice and working steps, doing what they told me to do, Well, begrudgingly, but still doing it, you know, in the best way I possibly could, and then refining that and finding it. My sponsor handed me a big book, and he said, here, know-it-all, you know everything, you find it. And when you find it, you tell me. And I would tell him, I'd go, oh, look what I found, you know, it says to do this. And he's like, I told you that 3 weeks ago, you know, just like her. that's all the time I got. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Bo. And our next speaker is Ronnie.
Hi, I'm Ronnie. I'm an alcoholic. Hi, Sean. He's so excited for this. So the 16-year-old that he's talking about was taken from me when he was 5 by my mom. And that was my downfall to go to detox at the mission. And so to have lost custody, you know, of my child, it was the worst feeling ever. And I didn't stop right away when that happened, but so I went to the mission. Like, I finally called and asked for help, and I said, okay, like, it's time. So my mom dropped me off at the mission, because I'm from here. I'm from Yuma. I was living in Phoenix at the time. She came and got me, brought me home, and 9 days of hell. Like, I never want to experience detox again. I was not addicted to just alcohol. It was multiple substances, and just to go cold turkey, because back then at the mission, what, almost 12 years ago, they didn't give you any medication. There was nothing. You just had to cold turkey. So I'm grateful for that, though. I'm super grateful to feel that pain, because I don't ever want to go through that again. So yeah, fresh. And then I was determined to not go into the program. So you do 9 days of detox, and then it's a 120-day program for drugs and alcohol. And I was like determined to not do this. Like, I was like, I'm good now. I got 9 days. You know, mom, pick me up. I'm ready. And she was like, no. She was like, you are going to do the program, or I will file paperwork to take your son from you. And I called her every name in the book. And then I went to the program. And then that's where I met my wonderful husband. Yeah, in 9 days, yeah, I go into education, because you have to, like, they got to, like, test you to see where you are in education-wise. And I see him. He's, like, wearing a wife beater and swim shorts and tennis shoes and a cowboy hat. Getting a massage from another man and, like, hitting on me, you know? And I'm like, this guy is a freaking maniac. Like, get away. But I didn't go to rehab looking for love. Like, that's not what I was doing, because in my mind, I was going to make it work with my son's dad. His name's Alex. And we were in a 10-year toxic relationship. All we did was abuse each other physically, mentally, emotionally, and drink and use together. But in my head, I was going to get sober and fix our family, you know, and he wasn't even interested in getting sober. He didn't go to treatment. I did. And so I wasn't even thinking about other people. So it was cool, though, because when I look back, to go through 4 months of living at a homeless shelter with somebody, you know, and we had classes together and we were friends, and, like, I feel like we've been through war together. And, you know, because the mission, I don't know if you guys know, like, it is a homeless shelter. It is not a spa treatment type place. You don't have a Zen garden, you know, and get to go and, like, you know, go to the movies. Like, you get up at 4 or 5 in the morning and do devotions. You have to have a job. You have to work the steps to graduate. They will not graduate you without working the steps. And so, like, it's a boot camp. But that's the type of alcoholic I was. I needed that. But so, yeah, I graduated the mission. My sobriety date is June 3rd of 2014, so coming up on 12 years. And I graduated the mission with a boyfriend that wasn't my husband, who was also in the program. And, you know, looking back, like, it's so dangerous to do that. You know, looking back, I'm not only am I messing with my recovery, I'm messing with somebody else's recovery, because I ended up breaking his heart, and he could have relapsed over that, you know, and died. Like, he's still sober today. I'm not sure where he lives. He doesn't live here, but, like, and that's why it's so important to not get into a relationship early on. Like, when I tell girls I work with, I'm like, okay, there's this year of, like, no relationships, or there's this rule of no relationships for a year. I'm like, let's bump it up to 5. Like, don't do shit for 5 years. Like, because, like, it's just so important to spend time with you and just get to know you, you know, but nobody listens, you know, and I didn't listen. And so at 9 months sober, he made it to the year we started hanging out. It was lust at first sight for sure. It was not love. It was lust. It was all the things, you know, that the book talks about. And so, yeah, we were like this on and off couple forever. We were like the AA makeup breakup couple. Like, we'd be together and like everyone would be like, are you and Bo together? You know, like nobody knew what we were. I didn't even know, you know. And then boom, I get pregnant. You know, and then the stuff gets real. And I call him. It's my birthday, like my belly button birthday, the day of his mom's funeral, and I find out I'm pregnant. And I call him as he's getting ready for his mother's funeral, and I said, I'm pregnant. And he's so excited. He's like, yes, let's get married. And I'm like, what the hell? Like, no, you know, and what are we going to do? Like, are we even keeping this baby? Like, what are we doing? You know, and we had to like get real. We had to get real with our sponsors. We had to really see if we could make this work. And we decided to give it a shot. So he moved in. And then that was like a whole thing, you know, when somebody moves in. Because I had my own condo. I think you were living with your mom before she passed. I don't know where you were. I don't know. When we first got together, he was still living at the mission and rode a bicycle around, you know, so like, I don't know. So he moves into my space, you know, and it was a whole thing. But you know what? We went through the pregnancy. We had a baby boy. And when I saw him hold our son for the first time, it was just the most beautiful moment. It was like all this selfishness just melted away. It was just beautiful. So I was like, okay, we can make this work. And then we got married. And then 3 years into marriage, I started going to Al-Anon. Because I was like, I don't know how to handle this, man. And like, just because you're sober doesn't mean anything. It really doesn't. You know, I mind that might sound harsh, like, yay, we're sober. We're not, you know, abusing alcohol. But if your behavior doesn't change, you're still drunk. Like, I was, and we were angry, and I didn't know how to deal with him, and he wouldn't listen to me, you know, and do all these things I wanted him to do. And so my sponsor's like, you need to go to Al-Anon. And so I did, and I haven't stopped, and it's been like 8 years of that. I love both programs. I can't imagine not working them together, especially sponsoring people. If you sponsor people, maybe check out Al-Anon. It really, really helps let them go through what they're going through and like letting go of the outcome. That's why I really, really like Al-Anon. And then diving deep into that, like my dad was a drug addict. My mom had issues. It just, our whole family's just like ridden with this disease. So Al-Anon really saved, I think, our relationship, because it helped me realize that like I'm still the problem. It wasn't him. Maybe I'm a lot more controlling than I thought. Like, that's what happened. And I was able to work the steps again, and I've worked the steps numerous times. But, you know, relationships and recovery, I mean, I can't imagine going through sobriety with anybody that's not sober. I don't understand that. And I'm grateful to share this with him, like the program. And we go to a meeting a week together, but we also have our own groups that we go to, and we have our own sponsors. And it's so important to not like mingle that, because we have a rule in our house, actually. If one of us relapses, you have 24 hours to be in detox, or you have 24 hours to move out, because that's it. That's all there is to it. I love you, but you're not going to do this to our family, you know? And we've never had to use that rule, which is like really, really cool. But you know, I can get annoyed with my husband, and I can do all the normal things of marriage, but I wouldn't want to be annoyed by anybody else. You know, I think about that, and you know, I really raising our children with, you know, the traditions and principles of this program. And I've learned a lot about marriage. So I'm his second wife. He's my first husband. I remember when we first started like hooking up, because it was just lust, you know? So we'd meet up, hook up, and he'd be like, I want you to be my girlfriend. I'm like, dude, you're still married. Like, I'm not going to be your girlfriend. And he'd be, and then we had this big, huge fight about it, because I was like, no, I'm not going to be your girlfriend. The next day, he got served with divorce papers. He's like, texted me, is it odd or God? And I'm like, oh my God, just get a divorce and we'll talk. And so I enjoy being married, and I like it because it makes me work harder. I don't get to just leave. There's legal paperwork I'd have to do, and I'm lazy. So I have to stay and work it out. I feel marriage is like a flower that needs constant tending to. I mean, things that we get things that we were at each other's throats about last year are just nothing today. But they've changed so much, so we have to stay flexible. Like I said, I love Al-Anon. And one thing my husband has really shown me is he truly accepts me for me, like all of my crazy. Like I'm crazy, you know, and I admit that and I own it. And so he can love me on my good and bad. I've never felt that before. That's the thing. I never got that growing up. I grew up in an extremely cold household, like no love, no hugs. You're doing everything wrong. And so for him to just really accept me for all of me was, that's unconditional love, you know, and I find that to be very rare today. And so I try to give that to my kids. And I read this really cool quote the other day that said, to love somebody is to witness them have 1,000 births. You know, like they're just constantly changing. And I just feel like that's what we've gone through in the last 11 years. We are completely different people than we used to be. And it's been a challenge and a beautiful journey to stay together through that, like change, but stay together and like learn to love each other. So it's just an everyday thing, you know. And one thing I really like about the Big Book is it tells me that, you know, alcoholics have this inability to have true relationships with anybody. I love that quote, and it's been true my whole life, but this is the most important relationship I have, you know, besides the one with my children. And I'm grateful to raise, you know, our kids in recovery and sobriety. And my friend Wanda always says, do I want to be right or do I want to be happy? I want to be both. I want to be right. But, like, it's not worth it, you know? Like, so I use that a lot with my husband. You're right, honey. That's what I say. You're right, honey. Compromise. I've got to learn to bend. I have to learn to, like, bend and not be rigid. And sometimes he gets his way and sometimes I get mine. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't really have much else to say, but I just really, so I don't know if you guys know, me and Bo, we were on the committee, like, 5 years ago and we started this panel because I just felt like AA and Al-Anon was so separate here at the Roundup. And I was like, man, let's do something. Let's mesh it. We were in charge of the panels. And I was like, let's do a joint AA and Al-Anon panel about relationships. And I was like, man, they're not going to vote for it. Like, no one's going to want to do that. And then here it is, 5 years later, it's still going. And we were finally asked to speak on it. But like, and you know what's funny is, like, I'm a relationship coach. So I decided to be a stay-at-home mom for, like, 7 years after we had our son. I got relationship coach, life coach certified. I write the advice column for the newspaper. I give people love advice. Like, I'm like, yes, this, but I cannot fix my own relationship. It's just hilarious. And so I have a sponsor, and I have mentors, and I have people that I go to when I'm struggling with accepting him for being the way he is at that moment. Because it's not like fairy tales all the time, you know, and we don't see eye to eye on everything, but I'm grateful to have the experience of giving advice to others. And then I think, like, would I listen to this? You know, would I be willing to do this? And, but yeah, our life is beautiful today if I choose to look at it that way, you know, because not every day I wake up full of gratitude, but, to see him, knowing he was a IV meth user, alcoholic living in his car, you know, to now saving people's lives and giving tracheas. I mean, it's so insane to witness that. And I'm so proud of him. And we're both on this, like, trajectory. But we wouldn't do it without the help of all of you. Seriously, we know so many people in this room that support us and love us and give us advice and just keep telling us, come on, keep going. Because there was, like, a year, I think I was, like, 8 years sober, where I didn't even want to do this anymore. I was so over AA. Like, I had learned everything there was to learn. I'm good, you guys. You know, I just didn't want to do it anymore. And you know what? If I had been with a normie, which I don't really think there are normies, but if I had been with a normie, they wouldn't have made me go to a meeting. You know, like, he watched me suffer for like 8 days and was like, okay, get in the truck. We're going to a Big Book study right now. And that Big Book study changed my life because it really helped me see what my problem was, and it was resentment. And if I had picked up the phone to call my sponsor, she probably would have told me that too, but I didn't. So I'm grateful to be in a marriage, in recovery, and not live like the majority of the rest of the world with drinking and using and partying. And I'm a stable mother, you know, for my 3 kids. We're going to start homeschooling, so wish us luck. And like, and just to be there for my kids, it's like, that's the biggest change I have, to have willingly, like, and I say my mom took my son away, but I gave him away. I said, yes, please take him. I can't do the things I want to do when he's around. And that selfishness, you know, like I knew deep down I couldn't take care of him anymore. And so I said, yeah, take him. And I'm going to get myself sober. And that's not what happened. But to now be their most, like, present person, it's such a gift. It's such a gift to be there for them. So that's it. I'm done. Thank you.
I just want to comment a little bit that 5 years ago, I was the program chair, and I asked Ronnie and Bo to, help me with the workshops. I was thinking we'd work together. They came up and told me what we were going to do. And I just said, okay. And it's turned out wonderful. And, I don't know, it took 5 years to get you up here, but in that 5 years, now you're ready to be up here. Anyway. Our next speaker is, let's see who we got here. Tom O. Tom? I still have to learn to follow directions. We're having a good panel because I do. Gene?
Hi, everyone. My name is Gene, and I am a very grateful Al-Anon member. I'm not a speaker, but I have my notes. Okay, so I was raised in an isolated manner. Good start, Gene. With very little drinking in my childhood home and no exposure to alcoholism. Tim and I met on Valentine's Day of 1976. We've been together for 50 years. When we were both 21, we were out dancing. Both of us had been drinking, which was unusual for me, but not so much for him. I was back in high school with a plan to go to university, and God laughed. I became very ill, diagnosed with mono, the kissing disease, and my liver was seriously affected. So I'd been hanging out with Tim and his friends who drank like fish. I drank very little. Tim was the only one I was kissing, yet I was the one with mono and liver issues. Medical treatment plan. Repeated testings, no drinking, no university, and only very part-time work allowed. So this went on for well over a year, leaving me deeply enmeshed in other seemingly alcoholic behaviors, which I kind of didn't know at the time, while I was stone cold sober. Tim did say I was a very cheap date. In many ways, Tim and I did well. We loved each other, still do. We're both hardworking with very like-minded goals. I worked in town, Tim worked in logging, and with his very long hours, I mostly took care of the home front as well. Being financially sound definitely helped us in what lay ahead. It wasn't cheap. When we were together, any socialization was usually with his friends or with his family, and there was usually always heavy drinking. As alcoholism is a progressive disease, it continued to get worse and eventually much, much worse. I was scared, I was feeling frustrated and helpless, hopeless, desperate, very hurt, and very, very angry. I believed if Tim loved me, he would stop. It was confusing for me because he taught me to drive in his brand new Chevy pickup, Beauty was her name, with her 454 motor, allowing me to drive her to and fro work. So obviously he loved me, but he didn't stop drinking. The night he asked me to marry him, I told him he needed to ask me when he was sober, and so he did. By the time an Al-Anon group started in our small town, announced by a tiny, tiny little newspaper ad, I'd been living with what I now believe was ever-worsening alcoholism for over 30 years. At my very first meeting, there was only Josie and I, and we simply shared. She told me enough of her war stories to let me understand I wasn't alone in this madness. She sent me home with the only Al-Anon book she had while asking me, "Now you are coming back." Even as crazy angry as I was actually being asked to come back. Now that's a program. Josie was no longer with us, but Lori, our member two, is. Lori is also a member of AA, and she was our rock in getting our Al-Anon group off the ground, and she remains the glue in holding us together. When in our rooms, She identifies as an Al-Anon member. She says she's a lifer in our program, and we are stuck with her. We're truly blessed. Another very important part of my healing was that our Al-Anon members were invited to attend open AA meetings. Every Thursday evening, I'd attend both meetings back to back. My Al-Anon program gave me hope for myself, and the AA program gave me hope for my alcoholic. These two programs also showed me that if Tim went into treatment, it needed to be a 12-step-based program giving him support to come home to. So there was another incident that happened, and I've cleared all of this with Tim. He doesn't mind. We were minding our own business. He was on the couch. I was sprawled on the floor. We were watching TV, and suddenly that foot came down, slammed into the floor. I jumped up, and he was in a full-blown seizure. So I called 911, and of course, by the time he came out of it, and it must have been quite a while because the room was full of the rescue guys, you know, it must have been very confusing for him, I'm sure it was. We got him into the hospital, and I followed in my van. I was no longer driving, Beauty, I had my own vehicle by then. And so anyway, he was in the emergency unit and I was in there, and the doctor was very, very kind. And so he asked me, you know, is there anything going on? And I said to him, well, he's an alcoholic and I think he's been trying to withdraw. And so he went, oh, he said, well, that's really good news. It's not a brain tumor. And I can remember thinking, are you freaking nuts? Like, you can cut a brain tumor out. So in the meantime, then he's talking to the nurse, and she said, no, he's told me he's only had a couple of beer. And so the doctor was apparently wiser. Okay, so, I don't remember where I was. Huh, okay, I do. Over a year passed, okay, so with my alcoholic's health issues ever worsening, with treatment refused, booked, delayed, and rebooked, during this waiting time, I received another gift. I got to take him to his very first AA meeting and got to see, got to see the love and warmth that he was received with. So they welcomed him like he was coming home. And of course, at that time, I really didn't know that that's what it would become, but it did give me hope. So in March of 2010, I finally got him south and into treatment. So we had to fly from Smithers to Vancouver, and then we had a bit of a wait there. And we were both concerned because we were afraid he would have another seizure. So I said, no problem. So he said, well, how are you going to do this? So I bought a couple of the little bottles of alcohol. I went and bought a bottle of pop, drank some off the top, went to the bathroom, poured the hooch in, shook it up, took it back, gave it to him. And he was happier, and we made it safely to Nanaimo. I should have had a little of that, too. I'd probably have been more relaxed and nicer. Okay. So leaving him there is still one of the most difficult things I've ever done. There's no doubt in my mind, by that time, we'd both been traumatized by the effects of this disease. Yeah, it's nothing to play with. Okay, so thankfully, those I dealt with at the center were mostly recovering alcoholics. I was allowed to feel that alcoholism isn't a dirty secret or a weakness. I was told there is a big difference between a wishbone and a backbone. Thankfully, there was nothing wrong with my spine. I'd just been living in ignorance of this truly, truly cunning and baffling disease. I learned that I needed to keep my hands off my alcoholics' recovery, and if family members have a program, such as Al-Anon, gee, I'm getting all emotional. Pulled some nose hairs or something, I guess. The alcoholic is more likely to succeed in their own battle. Finally, it was explained in such a way that I understood alcoholism is a disease, and I'm not better or smarter or stronger than the alcoholic. I just got lucky. And my body doesn't react in the same way. Sorry, guys. Oh, I really don't know where I was. Because I had drunk alcohol, there but for the grace of God, could have gone I. The very most hurtful thing for me had been believing if my alcoholic truly loved me, he would stop drinking. Tim was back from treatment, and so I'd stopped attending the open AA meetings to stay out of his way. One January 1st evening, we were together at an open AA meeting following a potluck dinner. The topic of the meeting was from the Big Book, Chapter 8, Two Wives, and I was asked to share. I said in part that my alcoholic did love me, that he didn't drink because of me, that his drinking had nothing to do with me. He drank because he's an alcoholic. The nodding heads and the huge smiles on the faces of a couple of the AA mentors told me they knew that the kid had finally gotten it. And that, of course, is the three C's from our book. Courage to Change explains it beautifully. I didn't cause it, I couldn't control it, and I surely couldn't cure it. But I had certainly contributed to it, and ignorance is not always bliss. Okay, so one day I told a very experienced addictions counselor that I believed my joining Al-Anon had saved my alcoholic's life, and therefore my life, but I didn't understand exactly how or why. She replied, "Of course, it's a domino effect. When something significant changes with a relationship, the entire relationship may change. My program has taught me so very many important lessons. I'm not an alcoholic, and therefore I can't possibly understand this disease from an alcoholic's perspective. I need to keep my hands off of my alcoholic's recovery while supporting him in doing what he needs to do to work his program. I need to continue to work and follow my Al-Anon path of patience, acceptance, trust, and humility. Patience for both of us in healing from the damage that has been done. Acceptance that alcoholism is not something that will ever miraculously go away. Humility that I alone don't have the power to fix any of this, while also holding on to the belief that I am still teachable. Thank you. The simplest prayer is a must to mark with appreciation the gifts that we receive daily. And thankfully, our programs give myself and my alcoholic a common language. My Al-Anon meetings are very important to me, with so much to learn from other members. I love the empathy, the humor, and the knowing that we've been heard and understood. My home group in Northwest British Columbia has approximately 10 or 12 members, men and women, including a couple of dual members, which I frankly love. Our meetings are hybrid, which allows our members to attend from across Canada as people move away or are away on vacation, and even from here in Yuma. For that, I'm very grateful. Newcomers are welcomed, and we love the opportunity to give back what we have received. We have only two groups in our entire district, number 28. The other group is strictly an in-person meeting and is right on the west coast, a four-hour drive away. Uh-oh, I've lost my spot. Again. Here we go. AA has lots of amazing literature. And if you haven't yet checked out the literature table here, please do. It's right out in the back there. With us living so remotely, literature has always been very important to me, and I have personally purchased most of the books and pamphlets available for my own use. I find small acts of service also help me to stay connected, giving me opportunities to work my program. I'm the website contact member for our northern group, so have fairly often been the first connection a newcomer may have in our group and sometimes to our program. I order our literature, ensure we have every pamphlet available, as well as letters to the professionals, anything to spread the word. I distribute literature around town and have decided I'm going to increase my efforts during our northern season, also working to get some out to other small communities relatively close by, under 50 miles, you know. We've lived in sunny Yuma for a total of more than 4 years, spread over 11-year period. Good program was the key priority for us when we began to look for snowbird opportunities, and we certainly found it here. We've been allowed to be a part of, and for that we're both very grateful. There isn't much more welcoming than a community of like-minded people on the same path of recovery. I've been very lucky here in Yuma to be able to attend two in-person weekly meetings and members having so much recovery and who so willingly share. I've also been offered opportunities to be of service, like today, which is another way to grow in program and fellowship as well. As our Al-Anon declaration states, let it begin with me, and thank you all for what we've been given.
All right, Tim, you're up.
Here we go. Hi, everybody. My name's Tim. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is March 3rd, 2010. So it's coming up in a couple of days. But that's the only thanks to this program and everybody in it. And I got to thank everybody that's here today, the Roundup Committee, everything. I know Jeannie was just a small part of it and stuff like that. And it's things like this where we get together and share our experience, strength, and hope, like so many meetings and that. But this is wonderful. And it still blows my mind today that we can come down here and join you people, you folks, and be a part of this wonderful part of the program, the unity. Okay, this is a little different. I like the younger perspective of it. Sounds like a lot more fun, guys. A lot more laughs, anyways. Just this is tough shit. This is reality, you know, what we share here today. The fun stuff, we need to. We're not a glum law, we know that. And I gotta say thanks to Gene for writing all this down. Now this is, we don't have our phones, but see, I am old school, but I did mention this morning, geez, we could have put that all on my phone and I could have read it from that. But that was this morning after she had handwritten all this stuff. Anyways, all of that's not in here, but I just had to throw that in there. Anyways, so the older perspective is, seeing as we were married for a lot of years, and that's coming up in April too, that's 48, because we lived in sin for a couple of years. That still does go around, obviously. But yeah. Anyways, I was raised in Tucson in a Catholic family, the sixth of eight kids, with a relatively normal childhood. Potential difficulties at school showed up as I was transferred from the Catholic school, so I learned how to pray. Went into the public system and learned how to pray, not much else, and was made to repeat grade two. In October of 1963, back in the old days, my entire family, with a promising opportunity, moved north to Canada. At the family's send-off party at age 10, I drank too much, smoked too much. I'm damn sure it was a Cuban cigar. I think that's why they banned them in this country back in the old days. But yeah, so that got me to, you know, the point of throwing up and understanding I shouldn't drink. So I stayed away from it for a little while. In Canada, I again had difficulty starting school 2 months after in October, so the school system was already gotten going. So I was kicked back again. You know, by the age of 14, school was not fun for me. It was tough, boo-hoo. But yeah, a classmate at age 14 would start bootlegging alcohol and that. Man, I was right into it once I got a taste at it. And, you know, bring it to school on Thursdays. I don't know what it was about Thursdays. You get over the hump day, I guess. I remembered the highs and the lows. And then I didn't want to go back to school in the afternoon. So it was already kicking in, you know, once with the highs and the lows thing. We had to be careful not to get caught. You know, the days I would have to walk 5 miles because I already knew the consequences of I would lose my privileges of the bus. And I did kind of like riding the bus because it was when I walked home after 5 miles, you do learn. So, but it's just like I say, the consequences. You know, okay, she's got written that down. Okay, so the signs were already there. I couldn't wait for Thursdays, and from there on in, my drinking escalated. At that time, the drinking age was 21, but at age 16, I was able to buy beer from the back of a local bar for myself and my friends, because naturally at 16, I got my driver's license, so I was the designated driver, right? At 17, still struggling with alcohol, defiant and angry, I walked out of school. Within a month, I had a good job, paying job at a lumber mill, worked there for the next 5 years. That's actually when I met Jeannie, but just before, but moving up fairly quickly. I began to operate heavy equipment soon after I met Gene. Okay, stick with the script, Tim. Quit the sawmill job, took a job in the bush, loading and logging trucks. The pay was good, bosses all overall were fair, but the hours were long and distant. The distance to the logging sites became further and further from town. Eventually, the increased distance required that I live in camp. During the week, distance continued to increase to the point where no camp was available, and we had to provide our own camp shacks to live in, as well as meals for the week. And there again, Jeannie was my backbone, like she said. She cooked all those damn meals for me. During the week, everything was all frozen. I had everything. She had everything. My bag was packed, ready to go. I didn't have to do a thing. I'd come home on Fridays, go to the bar, do what an alcoholic does. That's not in the script either. We didn't want to get too... Anyways, embellishing Tim, keep this... after 32 years, ending with almost impossible hours, I was paid out, including a performance bonus, not without a fight. With my disease out of control, I felt that my working life was over. It took over 5 years before I was willing to accept treatment. She talked about that. It was a little more of a back and forth about that, too. I had 1 week away from death. Cirrhosis, wet brain, weighing about 135 pounds. In that desperate state, I worked the offered recovery program. I had to be willing to accept help to the fellow inpatients, from the fellow inpatients, as well as from the counselors. And see, that's with me, with us, being in a relationship for so many years, that what I'm speaking to is the relationship with all kinds of other things that I had to do to attain what I have today. And that was with everybody in that. Like as was talked, even with Bo and Ronnie, they're like with family and on and on. And so while in treatment, a regular routine was established, meal times, bed times. I wasn't used to that for years. You know, counseling, both group, one-on-one. Once I was physically able, you know, gentle exercise. The military people, the RCMP and the cops and stuff like that, Debbie knows about it. You know, she was in there. They had more privileges than what the regular inpatients had because they were buff, they worked out, you know, stuff like that. So there was just that little bit of leeway. And... okay, now I've got, we've been together too long, I just lost my spot. During the first 2 months, we attended weekly in-house AA meetings, and I completed my first 5 steps. In the final 2 months, of that 4 months, I was in treatment. 6 patients lived, outpatients or whatever, we actually lived in housing, but still around the treatment center. But the same rules still applied. We had to go for meals. You were still under their thumb. I had to phone to arrange for rides. I had to get 5 meetings a week and that. And, you know, it's that taught me to reach out on my own, to actually phone. I took it as I've got to beg these guys that I don't even know for a ride. I've got 3 vehicles, a boat, and everything at home, don't you know? I'm paying for this, and I got to phone somebody to beg for a ride. But it was the best thing I ever could have learned to do was to ask for help. Because not one person ever turned me down with those phone calls. They were former patients in there. You know, some of them were only sober 8, 10 months or something like that. Most of them more than a year. But some of them could afford fuel for their cars. I tried to offer to help pay for the fuel. They refused every time. It was just mind-blowing to me that somebody would give back so freely. You know, and it took me to come home and learn from you guys that that's what we do. We give back. That's how this program works. You know, I had to find a temporary sponsor, completed another 5 steps in the last 2 months that was there. And so that was, there's a bit of a joke there. I won't go there. We're time restraints. We were allowed more freedom for simple shopping, trips still under the thumb of the center. Outings were offered, paid for by me, available for sign-up, such as sea kayaking, horseback riding, beach volleyball. And this was when I discovered to have fun, sober. One of the requirements to earn the treatment center medallion for completion of their program was a self-paid round trip home for a week. And in that sense, they normally would, you'd go home three times, but they found how expensive it was for us to fly from there back to our little town. You could fly from Vancouver, the island, to Toronto three times what it cost us to fly home, just that 700 miles. It was a little ridiculous. But my first night home, I attended, went to an AA meeting, I've missed very few since. Got into service. Oh, wait a minute. Oh, I skipped a whole bunch here. I'm trying to hurry this up. Before returning back to the center, okay. And after a few further days of debriefing, so I got back to that treatment center, and they debriefed the hell out of me and then shipped me back home again. They were done with me. Like what somebody was saying here about maybe they broke their sponsor. I thought I had broken both of my counselors because just after nobody saw Carl around the treatment center, and the Shelley, the one in the second, they never saw her again either because, it was quite the accomplishment Tim did. I don't think I broke them. And another opportunity offered, this is after I got home. I'm really trying to skip stuff here. Hurry up, Tim. I've missed very few. Got into service, this is after I got home. I got a sponsor, completed another full steps this time, all the way past five. I did all 12. And but then that little bit of a joke there, my first step five was with a priest. My next one, he was a firefighter. Thank you, Bo, for your service. And the third one, he was a carpenter. And I'm not going to go on how many a priest rabbi goes into a bar. That's just the way it was. This is how insane my sobriety that I have today that I love. And another thing too, they got me into online aftercare that they offered. Of course, I had to pay for it. And, I had that, I was only once a week, but that was not to be tacked on. That was not to be counted as an AA meeting because that was one thing. I had to get five meetings a week, even after and that, but thank God. And after a few years of sobriety, I became curious if I was employable. Went back to work for 6 months, loading, logging trucks. Why not go back to what you know? And I was in camp during the week. Proving to myself that I could do it. I didn't know. For one thing, it was to go back to doing the same thing that I had bitched about for years, complained about truck drivers. I love them now. They're people. They're great people. And some of them are actually my friends. But that 6 months there was two meetings that I could attend. And as it turned out, thanks to Al-Anon, once in a while, when the rest of the A's wouldn't show up, I would have to join the Al-Anon. So I do have a little bit of Al-Anon under my belt. Thank goodness. Then I was offered employment closer to home, allowing me to avoid camp, attend more meetings at home, because we had about seven or eight at that time. A much more sane solution to this lifestyle, because I needed and wanted my meetings by then, that's for sure. I fully retired in 2017. Our program, which we have a deep respect for, saved my life, saved our marriage, gives us a common language, like-minded goals, and strengthened our relationship. And the end. But no, I got to just say, guys, Thank you so much. Like, to be able to do something like this, I want to say I was thinking I was nervous, but anytime somebody asked me, I was told, if you share from the heart, you can't go wrong. And I noticed that. The young people that are up here yesterday when I stepped in and sat in, a couple of young ladies talked, and it was from the heart. It's just, I love it. I love the people in AA, but it's through that, and I know, I think Bo mentioned the traditions. We couldn't survive without the principles of this program, and that is the steps, traditions, and the longer I was in service, I got to know a little bit about the concepts. This whole thing, I couldn't just take the first 164 pages with some, you know, bleeding deacon say, that's all you need, that's fine. If that's good for you, that's fine. Whatever it takes. I don't care. Just get in here and stay. But I need everything. I need the young people. I need the old people. I need people coming back. I'm a guy that just needs everything. It's there for our grasping, and just reach out, grab it, get a hold of it. And if you start to slip on that rope, just tie a knot and hang on for dear life. And that, so... And also just, get ready for the ride of your life. I was told to hang on to the seat of my pants. It's going to be a hell of a ride, and it has been. Grateful to be here today with you guys. Thank you.